This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for stopping by the show. Been a crazy week. If anybody's been following the news, and I'm sure everybody has, so we've had this government shutdown that's finally over. The government is back working. The parks are open. People in the government are being told they will get paid for their time off, for their, I think, 16 days off. But it's definitely been a rough time in terms of people really not knowing where things were going with the shutdown, with the debt ceiling and everything else. Today, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the impact of the shutdown on government. Is it going to have an impact? Is this just short term or is this going to be long term? And when we're talking about it, we want to look at it in the dynamic of people's careers in terms of federal jobs, about people who are job seeking, people who are thinking about getting a government job, and people who are currently employed in the federal government. Will they want to continue to stay? The federal government used to be a place of stability, and it used to be a place that, hey, you know what, I can stay here not worried about being laid off or furloughed or anything else, not worried about any chaos in my job. But it seems to not be the case anymore. We're going to talk about this with Linda Ricks, one of our favorite guests. She is the co-CEO of Aview Technologies. They run aviewcentral.com and a couple other websites that we'll talk about later on. But they provide services to government agencies and a number of human capital services and other services that they provide. But Linda, welcome back to Fed Access.
Hey, thank you. Nice to be here.
Hey, always nice to have you. You know, this government shutdown, and you're also a federal contractor, so you can speak to this thing from, you know, really hands-on. What's been the impact, you know, not only for your clients who are government agencies, you know, but what's been the impact for you as a contractor? I mean, what's been going on?
Well, it has been varied. The impact has been on some agencies, it's been business as usual because we provide a technology platform, so we're not a services contractor, but I know a lot of contractors have gotten stop work orders during the entire process because they, you know, they provide a different kind of service altogether. And if there isn't money in the budget, then really you have to cease operations for that client. So it's been as impactful, I think, on private companies that are contractors to the government as it has been on the federal employees as well, so it's a shared burden along those lines. You know, I think there are we saw kind of a difference across the spectrum with our customers. Some were working, some were not. Some were technically not working, but still responding to emails and calls. So there was a real range of different types of activities that were going on. The folks that were doing procurement actions at the end of the fiscal year, you know, kind of there were a lot of things, a lot of loose things left hanging, you know, just to kind of clean up operations when you're used to end of year contract awards and things like that. So that kind of thing is a little tougher to, you know, get all of that sort of cleanup work that you expect to get done almost immediately.
Right.
Gets deferred a little bit. So those are the kinds of things that I think are pretty typical with a government shutdown. And I remember the one previously, so it's, you know, pretty much in keeping with that experience, I think.
You know, a lot of people ask the question, and I know you're kind of back and forth from, you know, D.C. and out in Washington State, so both Washingtons you deal with.
Yeah.
but, you know, did you see any impact? And I know it definitely depends on the kind of company you are, but did you see any impact on, you know, the coast, you know, out in Washington State, Colorado? You know, it's not just D.C., but we talk about a number of government agencies, you know, being outside of the Beltway and mm-hmm. being in the Midwest and the West Coast and other areas. Did you, as you were talking maybe to other people, did you kind of see the impact of the shutdown on those kind of agencies who were outside the Beltway?
Yeah, because we live in a hub of folks that are in military bases in this area. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of Navy and Army and Air Force presence here. And so the impact really was, there was a lot of discussion about it because for some reason, and I still haven't quite figured this out yet, the commissary is closed, for example. So military members that would have been grocery shopping there were out on the economy, you know, doing their grocery shopping. And, of course, the prices are higher outside of military installations. And their wages are not comparable to what you would make in the private sector. So I think that's a bit of a sticker shock problem. But we also saw a real range of things. It was on the local news here every night. There would be a park that, you know, where a park ranger gave a ticket to a teacher and her group that were trying to get onto a national park that where the road looked open and it was closed. And, you know, all kinds of controversy around things like that. This is a state that the Pacific Northwest is an area that prides itself on outdoor activities and, you know, being out, doing things year-round. And so that did not set well. There were, you know, a host and a range of other issues. We have defense contractors here. Boeing is here. I did not hear a great deal of impact on Boeing. I think they had less impact during sequestration also than some of the other big defense contractors had. But there, you know, you definitely you heard about it every day. People speculated about it every day. Senator Murray from Washington State is on the Senate Budget Committee, so she and Paul Ryan are expected to start moving forward on the budget. So, you know, we keep our eye on our favorite senator and what she is doing. So you can see the range of impact was pretty profound outside of the Beltway, but it was different.
Wow.
And I think one of the things that really characterized it outside of the Beltway was the impact on citizens and services for citizens. Like fishing industry here could not get clearance to go fish, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a significant industry in this area. I know one of the captains of one of the crab boats on Deadliest Catch actually testified Congress on the fact that he needed to get out there. You know, these are limited runs, and timing is everything.
You know,
so it was pretty, you know, it was pretty serious, I think.
Yeah. I mean, and do you think that, you know, this at this point in time, maybe the population who maybe doesn't deal with government, or sometimes we kind of maybe take it for granted because we don't realize how much government is integrated in our daily society. Just like you mentioned the fishing.
Right.
I don't think anybody thought about that until something like this happened, you know, where we talk about, you know, FAA and planes. I mean, it's there, but we don't think about it until something happens, the NTSB or anything like that, you know, or a number of different things where our government is involved, whether in regulation or keeping people safe. We don't think about it until all of a sudden, you know, it's no longer there. Do you think that people maybe got a better appreciation for government? I mean, I guess it's kind of a catch-22 question, but do you think there was a better appreciation for just a regular citizen who's not a government employee that, wow, you know, the parks are no longer open. Wow, you know, we can't go out and fish. You know, we can't go out and get business because the government, you know, is the one who allows us to go do these things or provides a certain, you know, things in order to help us go catch our fish. Do you think it's now a better sense that, wow, we really do need to get this government situated and get things running straight?
I think that's a double-edged sword because, as you put it, because there are people who think the government does too much,
mm-hmm.
and this would have highlighted that. And then there are people who didn't realize. I mean, I look at it as the air you breathe, you know, the water you drink. The radio that you listen to, all of this has some level of government regulation and control over it, and it provides the support system for the quality of life that we have. So, it is something where it is unseen. You know, it's kind of like air and gravity.
Mm-hmm.
You don't notice them until they're gone.
right. Right, sure.
And so, you know, I think there's a lot of that. I hope that it provides some framework for some thoughtfulness around the impact of and how decisions are made on the types of services that are in fact cut off when something like this occurs, and those that are, you know, what we used to call essential, I think called exempt or non-exempt now, but you know, the decision makers that make these decisions on behalf of the agencies, and I recall seeing something briefly in the news about the head of the Park Service deciding to close the mall, for example, in Washington. Well, those of us that have been to the mall in Washington know that it's pretty much an open grassland. It's a
right.
grass field.
Sure.
And so that those kinds of decisions don't make a lot of sense when you start to see that kind of thing happen. So you wonder, is that a political move being
mm-hmm.
made by the agency?
Right.
You know, or is that something that, you know, legitimately we would have to, you
to
know,
actually shut down because we don't want either the cost to it, or they don't want the liability of somebody getting hurt or something if it's actual legitimacy to that.
Right. So those decisions, there should be a framework and a structure for those. And I think that, you know, this lesson is, if we're, you know, we're really still under a CR for a very short period of time. So if this happens again, you know, what is the protocol?
Sure.
That's going to be followed, and how is that going to be followed, and the, you know, the recall of people, and in the middle of it by DOD, for example. You know, these are the kinds of things that are sort of unexpected. It's kind of like, well, if you're going to do that, you know, who's making those decisions, and what's the framework around which they're making them?
You know, I want to talk a little bit more. Got to take a quick break, but I want to talk about with the CR. I mean, we've got a temporary dynamic that now keeps the government open, but again, it's very, very temporary, only a few short months, and then we may be back at this again. I want to talk about that in terms of the impact of not only the government, but also contractors. Does this impact hiring? Does it impact a number of different ways? Does it impact the way you do business? And so let's talk about that when we get back. We're talking to Linda Rick. She is the co-CEO of Aview Technologies. You can find them at aviewtech.com, but they also run a government website called aviewcentral.com, as well as a number of different websites. They provide a number of human capital and technology solutions to federal government agencies, and to help them hire people, to help them oversee the performance of people and make sure people are doing a great job, and a number of other things. We'll be right back after this break. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we've been talking about the government shutdown. Who hasn't these days? Everybody's been talking about it, but we've been talking about it as well. We've been talking about the impact. As we know, the government's back open now, but we've been talking about the impact of the government shutdown on government contractors, on regular citizens, but also on federal agencies. But it's not just the impact of people who were furloughed, but what's the impact on morale? What's the impact long-term and short-term in terms of people thinking about government as a job prospect now? Has that changed? What's the impact of government workers right now? Do they think they should possibly make other moves? Should they get out of government? What's their outlook on terms of government service now? We're talking about this with Linda Ricks. She is co-CEO of Aview Technologies. They are a solution provider, human capital services, technology, and a number of other things. They also run a government website called aviewcentral.com. If you're a job seeker, you should go there. You can find federal jobs. You can also apply to federal jobs on that site as well. Linda, you know, we were talking about this whole dynamic of the CR and this temporary thing. I think we've got till January now to that the government's, you know, being funded. And we've been dealing with CRs for several, you know, for quite some time now. For the past, you know, year or two, we've been dealing with CR. You know, for a government contractor like yourself, and even for federal agencies, I mean, how does that impact both business in terms of, you know, getting business, responding to RFPs, talking to people when people only have a limited amount of money? They don't even have a full budget for a full year to operate on.
Right. And it is uncertainty is something the government doesn't like. You know, generally the the reason for a lot of the appeal of government, both as a contractor, you know, having government as a customer, as well as an employer, is that there's a fairly high amount of certainty and a fairly low amount of risk,
mm-hmm.
you know, associated with that. When it comes to this kind of volatility, which, what is it, last 3, 4 years, 5 years,
right.
You know, that we've had, where people really don't have a budget and cannot do any kind of long-range planning. You know, your best bet if you're a contractor is to be able to have sort of staff augmentation services and things along those lines that can be drawn by the government on an as-needed basis, kind of ad hoc, because if you're looking for something really long-term, I think it's very difficult for an agency to commit to something long-term. So part of what I'm concerned about is you know, they backed the end of the CR up against the second round of sequestration cuts that are coming in, and I think that's lending to an environment of everybody hunker down, nobody make any big decisions, don't make any bold moves, don't do anything particularly innovative, you know, just kind of stay the course with what you have until you have, you know, better visibility on the future. And I think that's very damaging for the government as a customer and as an employer.
You know, with that being the case, do you talk to your government clients and are they saying, hey, listen, we really can't strategically plan past, you know, 2015, or we really can't forecast past, you know, this amount of time because we really just don't know what's going to happen right now? I mean, does that impact both how they do business in terms of bringing on contracts, you know, and to get things done? But does it also impact as well as just, you know, the morale? As I said, listen, we really can't foresee anything in terms of hiring people. We can't foresee anything in terms of maybe promotions of people. I mean, is the impact just, you know, does it really go throughout the whole agency on several fronts?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's part of it is the inability to plan forward strategically. And we're maybe it's kind of an efficiency play.
Mm-hmm.
It requires a strategy. It requires change management activities. You know, we require people to kind of commit to an end point, a goal that they're trying to achieve. And most of that is to, you know, increase efficiency and reduce cost. And you would think that in a severe budget crisis that that would rule the day.
Yeah.
But
that should be the priority right now.
Right.
So, right.
But, you know, I think it's because it requires significant business process change, and because the roles of the players change a great deal, it is very hard to get organizational commitment to something like that. I think the general reaction is retrenchment.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to what we know. Let's do what we've always done. Let's stay the course with what we have. Let's try to hold on to what we have. You know, and not make any changes that might cause us to lose, for example, positions or people or a reduction in payroll that we can't justify because the bodies aren't on board already. And most of the reductions, I think very few agencies have actually conducted reductions in force or anything like that, but there is high speculation now that that's going to be potentially what's required in 2014. So there's a lot of conservation of our funding, right? We want to make sure that we have enough funding conserved to meet our payroll with, you know, the level of staffing that we have currently. We don't want to have to cut staffing in order to do something else over here that is not people related. So I think you see a lot of that. You know, I think the lack of hiring in the government is, you know, kind of producing a, you know, it too is one of those things where it's a blessing and a curse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not backfilling positions, but you're not having to run a reduction in force either.
Right.
But at the same time, you're not getting any bench strength. So when there is an opportunity to fill positions and where we have budget certainty and those kinds of things, there's going to be a scramble to, you know, get the right talent on board and be able to fulfill those obligations.
You know, this leads to another question. Are we dealing with a dynamic, and you just mentioned about getting the right talent, you know, are we getting to a point now, and, you know, and of course everybody talks about this, and I think, you know, Linda, you and I both have seen when the government has been hungry for people. We've both seen both ends of the sword, in which, you know, the government has been hungry for people because the private sector and other sectors were doing great. So the government was saying, hey, we need talent. We need, you know, we're looking for people to be government servants and government employees. And they were having a hard time recruiting some of the top talent because they were going out to the private sector, whether it be IT firms or other kind of firms. They were going out to that sector. If the economy improves or continues to improve and the private sector begins hiring people, you know, and with good jobs, good salaries and everything else, are we going to get back to a moment where kind of, you know, government is not going to be the most desirable place to work? And again, given with this shutdown scenario and where we also talk about government workers kind of being punching bags of politicians, that, you know, they love them when they need them, but then when the first mistake happens, they want to basically crucify everybody in that government agency. Are people going to get tired of that and say, you know what, it's not even worth it. I might as well just work in the private sector.
Yeah, I do think this runs a great risk for the government's reputation as an employer, and part of it rests on the fact that over, you know, and you and I have talked about this a little bit too, over the last decade or so, the federal employee that is classically a public servant has that whole federal employment arena has become a great deal more politicized than it used to be. And the result of that is, it adds unpredictability into the equation. It makes you feel like you're a pawn. You know, I heard on the radio on the way in this morning, someone who was a federal employee talking about being a political football. And I think that it adds a dimension of drag on morale and on the desire of people to continue to work organizationally. I hear it a lot from people who have 20 years in with the government, and they've just said, you know, this isn't what it used to be. This isn't the kind of work I want to do. I don't feel like I'm in a situation where I can be a contributor on the level that I used to be, and so I'm out. And that's, you know, I think that's the danger and the risk of these kinds of tactics, is you end up with people who are, you know, among the best that we have and who really believe in the notion of public service, and that's why they entered into federal government work, and they're getting discouraged pretty roundly here.
I'll take a quick break. When we come back, I want to keep on talking about this because I think this is important in terms of the reputation of the government. I don't know if politicians are hearing this. I'm not sure if they're really understanding that what they are doing, you know, can really have some very, very long-term negative impacts on government. You know, especially we need some of our top talent. We don't need our government workers to be the second or third tier. We need them to be the top tier of talent who's working on a number of different issues, that critical issues that we deal with in order to keep our nation safe, but also in order to keep our economy moving forward and a number of other things. I want to keep on talking about this. We're talking to Linda Ricks. She is the co-CEO of Aview Technologies. You can find them at aviewtech.com. They also run a government job site called aviewcentral.com, where you can find government jobs and you can also apply to government jobs on their site as well. We'll be right back. We're talking about the government shutdown, the impact of the government shutdown. Even though the government's back open, this thing is going to have some long-term impacts on what people perceive the government to be, possibly the reputation of government and everything else. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we're having an intriguing conversation about the government shutdown. You know, the dynamics of the impact of the government shutdown are still being felt. Even though people are back to work, some people in the government contract community were laid off. They may not get paid, they're saying. Government workers were laid off. They will get paid. But some people who are still living paycheck to paycheck, that may impact them in a number of different ways. Even though a number of companies have provided assistance to help these government workers, there could still be some impacts on their livelihoods as well, and also the reputation of government. What does this say about government if we're getting to the point where government workers are being furloughed, not for any real good reason, but just over politics? We're talking about all these issues with Linda Ricks. She is co-CEO of Aview Technologies. You can find them at aviewtech.com. They also run the job site aviewcentral.com, where you can find federal jobs and apply to them. Linda, you know, we were just talking about kind of the reputation of government, and you know, you've dealt with government hiring. I mean, and you've been on the side where one time you were a government worker working at OPM, then you came out, now you're a federal contractor, and you're helping in the dynamic of helping federal agencies bring in talent, bring in the right talent. You know, do you hear from your clients that the concern about getting the right talent that maybe not particularly right now, but in the future, as things continue to grow, when government sector maybe becomes less attractive to people, are they concerned about the talent they're bringing in? Also, are they concerned about the retention of good talent?
Yeah, I think everybody is concerned about that issue. I think that's why you see more and more of government services being provided by contractors as well, because I think government does struggle with being competitive, especially in new and emerging kinds of occupations like cybersecurity and things mm-hmm. like that, where maybe being competitive means that the best way to get that kind of talent working for you is through a contractor, that's a concern to everybody, I think. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of speculation about whether that's more expensive or less expensive. And regardless of where you end up on that spectrum, you now see that the government relies fairly substantially on contractors. And
is that going to increase, you think, Linda? Is that going to increase?
You know, I would be loath to speculate on that.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because, you know, you see things like this recent kind of kerfuffle on the background investigations work being done by contractors versus federal employees, and things along those lines. And you think, well, maybe that's going to be retrenched back into government, and government employees are going to do that, or maybe that's just a sign of the times, and you're going to have to accept that you know, certain of these services are going to be performed by contractors no matter what. What it does do is it gives government an advantage of being much more agile than the federal personnel system permits it to be otherwise. So I would think that one way to address it would be to reform the federal personnel system so that there's more agility within the federal workforce, that it's not so over-regulated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you can't move people around the way you'd like to. There's no the notion of temporary extension of resources that you hire, and what that looks like, and how that makes the government not very competitive when it comes to temporary hires because of the lack of benefits and a bunch of other stuff. So I think somebody has to look at that and say, what's the best way to create a competitive and agile workforce, and then what is the best way to make sure that these political swings that are occurring are not so damaging to both the workforce and the reputation of the workforce? Because people do not come in to work for the government to work for a party or an ideology.
But, you know, my concern, Linda, is that, you know, and I just don't, as I look at Washington and, you know, we've both been around this city for a long time. And you know, I wonder if things are becoming more entrenched, even though we did now have the situation where they did come to a compromise or whatever to get the government back open again. I just get concerned that it's becoming so divided. And I do hear these politicians beginning to beat up on government agencies or government workers. And then when one thing happens that's wrong, wrong, then it's like, oh, you see what happens. But the crazy thing about it is that these people are technically government workers, but they rely on a lot of the products that the government provides. They rely on, but they also want to get money for different agencies to be spent in their cities and towns. Mm-hmm. Are the politicians hearing it, or do you feel like there's kind of this, people are just oblivious, and it's really about the cycle of kind of just swaying to whoever's going to vote for you?
You know what I think it is it's less the election dynamic,
mm-hmm.
of bringing people into political office. I think it's more the pressure that we're seeing increase between the political appointee layer in government, which is pretty extensive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one, two, three, maybe three levels down, from the secretary of a department.
Right.
And the pressure there that has created, differences between what I think federal workers have classically had, which is an absence of big P politics in their day-to-day operations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's increased that influence of big P politics into day-to-day operations. And I think people are having, if you're not, if you see your job as, for example, the, in HR, your job is to defend the merit system. And if people come in and, do things or make you do things or ask you to do things that are contrary to that, that are very powerful, you start to really lose your ability to effectively play out that role.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what I'm seeing, is more discussion by a lot of people, and certainly by, some chief human capital officers that, are basically around that layer of protection that used to be there that differentiated the federal government from, say, even state and local government, where it is more intensely politicized lower in the organization. But that layer and that buffer that used to be there, where you executed the mission that you were given by statute, and people did not really ask you to compromise that safety net is gone.
So there's no longer that safety net between maybe a congressman or congresswoman and maybe that GS-15 or 14 within an agency about their decision making. That those layers of protection between the political appointees, who are usually kind of the ones running the agency, and then you have the senior managers, who are your career people, who have been with the agency. So political appointees may be there for a few years, 4 years or so, the eight, depending on who's in charge of the party and everything else. But then you also have those who have been in the agency for a long time, have kept the continuity of the agency. The buffer between politics and those who run the agency is no longer there.
Yeah, I think it's eroded substantially. And it's highly problematic, because the real and people may not like this word particularly, but I kind of like it, because mm-hmm. it characterizes the federal workforce as they are not tenured, but they have a tenure-like
mm-hmm.
Structure.
Sure.
Where they are to be protected from partisan politics.
Mm-hmm.
To a very, very great extent. And what we're seeing is highly centralized control, very high up in the organization, on decisions that would normally be made much lower in the organization. So you get a lot of centralized control, a lot of centralized control of funding. There's this whole initiative around the one department initiative. There's one DHS, there's one DOD, there's a lot of centralization going around, which consolidates power.
Right.
And when it consolidates power like that, it makes it very difficult for people who are not in that centralized control framework to be able to do their jobs. And do their jobs, particularly outside of the Beltway, when you get out into field operations, when everything is centralized back in Washington, D.C., but you're responsible for executing the plan, and you're responsible for, you know, administering certain laws and regulations free from that political influence. And that I think, has been the challenge that the government has faced over the last, maybe the last decade or so. Increased centralization, which has centralized power, particularly close to the political layer, which has made and changed agency operations to be highly politicized. And I think that for most public servants, that's a very, very uncomfortable situation to be in.
And it's probably making some people rethink about government. I want to take a quick break, but I want to keep on talking about this. And I want to also go into, what are we seeing with the trends of maybe government hiring? Will there be, you know, with these CRs and everything else, is there going to be some government hiring? You know, people who are looking for federal jobs, is this still a market that you should still be looking at, or do you need to start putting your eyes on another sector? We're talking about all these things with Linda Ricks. She's co-CEO of Aview Technologies. They run a job site called aviewcentral.com, where you can find federal jobs and also apply to them there. You can find their website at aviewtech.com. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we are talking about the shutdown. The government shutdown that's been happening for 16 days, but now the government's back open. But a lot of people are saying, hey, listen, what's the impact of the shutdown? Is this thing going to just go away? Or are people going to remember this moment and remember it as a time in which maybe it shifted people's minds on government? People who are looking for government jobs have been impacted. A lot of the job sites have been down. People can't apply to agencies because those are deemed non-essential parts of that agency, human resources elements. People couldn't apply because of a number of reasons. They couldn't reach people at these offices. So people are wondering, is this still a good place to work? Is it still a good place for me to possibly pursue a job? We're talking about all these issues. We're talking to Linda Ricks. She is co-CEO of Aview Technologies, and they're a company who have dealt with a number of human resource issues in terms of the recruitment, staffing, and retention of government employees. They run a job site called aviewcentral.com, but you can find their website at aviewtech.com. They provide a number of government solutions to federal agencies. Linda, as we're talking about this, you know, we've kind of created this situation where the reputation of government, you know, is continuously being damaged, but with not only just the shutdown, but the CRs, the sequester, the budget reductions, the military now is downsizing, you know, all the word that we're getting out of government is sometimes negative. Is there any kind of sign of hope? Is the government going to be hiring? Is there anybody who's going to be looking for new talent? Is it healthcare, defense? What are we thinking about?
Yeah, I
don't know.
We're back to that January 1 interview we did with the crystal ball.
I know, right?
Yeah. I think the government will... At some point here, we'll arrive at some level of stability, and the government will begin hiring again. They may be hiring differently than they have in the past. We know that the generational shift in government is the CSRS retirement class is exiting, and the FERS class is coming up, and of course, FERS was specifically designed to make it easier to move in and out of government so that you didn't have what used to be called the velvet handcuffs of CSRS, where, you know, you want to get vested and you want to stay in government very long term. So I think the employment expectations of people will change, and certainly have changed in the private sector substantially. We're not looking at the same kind of federal employee as we have in the past with very, very long-term commitment. So that's one thing I think that will change. I think if I were looking for a federal government job today, I'd be looking for an agency that is self-funded.
And when you talk about self-funded, I mean, what kind of, because when people hear that, people, what kind of agencies are those? Like an IRS, or who is that?
Actually, it's agencies that that receive their budget or appropriation from sources other than Congress.
Okay.
So fee-based agencies that are actually generating, like the FDA, that generate revenue because they are, in effect, charging private companies for services and for clearances of new drugs and things like that. You know, there are a number of federal agencies that are kind of quasi-federal corporations. There are agencies that are related to funding for a specific purpose that is multi-year funding. So remember when we had ARRA and TARP and, you know, these other things. These are sources of funds that are not subject to the wildness of the federal budget process. So I think that's one area to look at for a little more stability along those lines. I also think that, and these are largely accepted service agencies as well. Smithsonian, for example, is I think it's kind of like half of it is trust fund operated, and the other half is appropriated. So you know you want to look for some opportunities like that if you want to get out of this you know. Hamster wheel activity of the budget cycle every year, but I think that in the future the type of hiring and what we do see, we still see in the top 10 jobs posted on USA Jobs, you will always see in that top 10 IT. You know there continue to be aggressive efforts to recruit IT workers.
Right.
You know you continue to see HR.
Right.
They're always in the top 10. Other administrative, general administrative functions are always in the top 10. These are and these are jobs that don't require highly specialized experience. So, you know, you don't have to have an accounting degree or you don't have to have an engineering degree. You know, so if you have a, you know, general Bachelor of Arts or if you've not gone to college but you have extensive work experience, those are jobs that are in the what are called the 300 series, and you know those are constantly in demand. They're constantly in demand for project managers for big large scale projects. So those are the ones we tend to see over and over and over again. Acquisition personnel, there are a lot of accounting jobs. These are the kinds of positions that always hit the top 10. The positions that dominate are for the VA.
Okay.
And they are medical officers and nurses.
Mm-hmm.
Those positions, there are a large volume of them. I think they usually comprise 40% of the job postings on USA Jobs are VA medical jobs.
For the VA and anything healthcare related is going to always be an area that you can possibly find jobs.
Yeah, and I heard someone, a political pundit, the other day talking about the two Americas are actually those of us that work in healthcare and those of us that don't.
Okay,
you know?
okay.
I think that's true right now. So you know, there's a lot of that. And what you have to decide is how are you going to pursue your career? What is it you want to do? Do you really want a long-term career? Government typically has represented very long-term careers. Most people today are in a job for 2 or 3 years, and then they move on with an employer. I read the other day that Google and I'm gonna remember that shortly. These very, very large high tech companies, the average tenure is 1 year. So when you look at what employees expect in the new workforce that's coming in that will be replacing the class of CSRS, that workforce does not have a lot of expectation that they will be there very long.
Right.
right. And they will move on.
Do you think with the new generation that they're not the generation who's looking at that stability factor, especially, I mean, you know, we've got a number of years that where the economy may be changing, cyber people and healthcare, the new workers, do you think that they may jump into, you know, I mean, there was a time where people jumped into government and then jumped out and then mm-hmm. maybe jumped back in. Do you think we're heading back into that time period again where you know, you're going to have that, just like you were just mentioning, 1 year, 2 years, there's always going to be a group of people who wants to ability, but you know, when the job market is right and there are a number of jobs out there, government may just be one option out of many. Would you say?
Yeah, I think it is an option. I think we have to be very careful because we have you know, we have a cadre of people now that are very disenfranchised because of the lack of job opportunity after, you know, going through college and racking up sizable student loans and you know, going through that whole process only to find that they were not employable because there were no job opportunities. So you have a large segment that's disenfranchised completely, and then you've got, you know, you've got another segment of folks whose expectation is, well, I'm self-reliant. I'm going to make that call.
Mm-hmm.
My employer is never going to be in a position to be able to victimize me because I'm in control of that.
Sure.
And I think that's a growing, you know, a growing trend of self-reliance by people. A lot of folks are, you know, in companies with, you know, under 10 employees. The technology enables you to do that today in a way that is profoundly different
right.
than it was even a decade ago, you know. So I think those changes are going to impact the government's ability to recruit and retain, and I think the government needs to focus on what is the continuity layer, you know, that you were talking about, where we've relied previously on a, you know, a cadre of civil servants to be the continuity as things change at the top. What does that continuity layer look like if the workforce is in and out, and if the workforce has, you know, considerably less tenure than, you know, I don't know what the average is right now, but it's up there in
right.
terms of years of service. You know, so addressing those are more compelling problems to address than trying to figure out how to fill a job in under 80 days, you know, kind of a framework.
I wish we had more time because there's so many questions buzzing in my head. We're going to have to do another show on this because there's so many different things we can talk about that really does have an impact on, you know, federal hiring and also the impact on, you know, how good our government is. I mean, you know, we want to have the best government because, I mean, it has an impact on all of our lives in many different ways. And so we really do want to have the best talent and the best ideas coming out of government. And we've had that. We don't want to lose that. And I guess the concern is, are we going to lose that in, you know, to other sectors? And we did lose it at one point in time, and people were concerned that we didn't have it. And my concern, I think all of our concerns, is that this may happen again. Mm-hmm. Linda, just thank you so much for giving your insight. We're going to have to continue this conversation because this is a long-term conversation.
My pleasure, Derek. Always fun.
Always fun. Thank you. We'll talk to Linda again. Thanks for listening to Fed Access. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.